Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. I am literally Ellie Gibson.
You certainly are, and I am Helen Thorne. But who is joining us tonight, Ellie?
Tonight we have Dr. Rachel Andrew.
Hello.
And Anya Hayes.
Hello.
Not a doctor.
No, I'm not a doctor, no.
But you do have very nice earrings, so you've got that going for you. You've got that. Now, Dr. Rachel, you are a clinical psychologist and a mother who has been working with children and families for over 14 years.
I know.
You've been on the telly and that. What have you been in on the telly?
I started in a...
X Factor.
Oh.
Disappointing.
Stars in their eyes.
Yeah. Splash.
It's a knockout.
Don't make me angry. A few years ago when I was helping teenagers with different anger issues.
Was it like a game show? Was it like...
Don't make me angry.
Stop them smashing up their bedroom. Oh. And Anya, you've written a book. In fact, you've written a book with Rachel.
Yes.
Yes. And you're a Pilates teacher specialising in pregnancy, motherhood, mindfulness and wellness.
Yes. All of those things.
Oh,
and she lives down the road, which I think is
that's the main reason she's here.
Yes.
Well, we should say you've written, so together you've written this book, The Supermum Myth: Overcome Anxiety, Ditch Guilt and Embrace Imperfection. That sounds like I like the cut of their jib, Helen.
I like it too, and it's got a lightning bolt on the front. I like it. It's in big bold letters. You've kind of gone with the theme of the Justice League. I like this. I'm analysing the cover.
You're literally judging a book by its cover. That's what you're doing.
I'm a walking cliche, Ellie, what can I say? But yes, the super mum myth. Do you want to talk us about that?
Or should I talk us about that?
Let's embrace the imperfection.
So imperfection.
Oh. Wow.
Tell us about your book.
What is the super mum myth?
The super mum myth. Well, it's breaking down the kind of the idea that there is a perfect mum and that we all should aspire to be that embodiment of perfection. It's trying to make women who might be feeling a little bit shitty about what they're doing day to day and feeling like some of their days are a little bit more crap than wonderful, and actually turn around their kind of appreciation of how much they're achieving as opposed to just always focusing on what they're failing with. So, and it's also like, where do we get the idea of supermum? So it kind of breaks that down as well, talking about how you, before you become a mum, you're probably the best mum you could ever be because you have these like ideas. Oh no, I'm never ever going to feed my child anything but organic flapjacks that I've made myself, and they're never going to look at screens, and they're going to go to bed at 7 o'clock, and they're never ever going to have a tantrum because, oh my God, tantrums are for feral children, who are for women who don't care about their children enough. All those things that you have these opinions on before you even have a baby in your tummy, or however you get your baby in the end. And then suddenly you are a mum and you go, oh, I didn't think that I would ever be this mum. And it's that kind of projection of perfection which you don't even know that you have until you don't meet that expectation. And it's where that expectation comes from, whether it's from you, your own parenting, society, judgments from everyone, and all the kind of general fires that we're fighting all the time.
So how much of that is you? Because so you've both got two kids each. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes.
Together they have four.
But like, so Rachel, so, you know, as a qualified psychologist, you've actually learned things about this kind of thing. Did you also have this myth in your head before you had kids, or did you kind of know it was bollocks before you started?
No, I reckon I had it in my head. And I think in terms of my psychology training and You know, I was taught to deliver parenting programs as well. So I think even more so, I had an idea of if you just know enough stuff and learn how to do it properly,
yeah,
you can kind of get better outcomes, as it were. So I think even more so, I think when I had children, kind of I really felt the pressure, because I also thought, okay, I'm kind of like, some people see me as a parenting expert, and so there's even more pressure for me then to produce.
Don't fuck it up. Don't fuck it up, Rachel.
You know that can go wrong.
Yeah. and is it something, because I remember reading about a psychologist who had been teaching parents about parenthood and then became a parent and was like, I'm so sorry I said all those things. Yeah. And it happens to you. I have a really, really wonderful sister-in-law. She is now, because she's become a mum, and for so long she was like, oh, you just need to do this. I read an article and all you have to do is this. I was like, I love you so much, Caroline. But one of the things that's happened since she's had a baby is she's just been so kind and was like, oh, I didn't realise. And until you've walked in those shoes, I think it's really hard.
It's changing, but there's not as much honesty. I had my first 6 years ago, and there certainly wasn't the climate of sort of being more open and honest about how challenging it can be. And I think in that environment, you then just think, God, everyone else is coping so much better than me, and you know, I'm a complete failure. And it's that we're trying to overturn. I think that kind of like, actually you're not, because everyone else is completely winging it as well, and we're all slightly failing on certain days and winning on others, you know.
I used to imagine the, you know, the mums who turned up to Mother's Group who had really nice hair and ballet flats and like nice handbags. I just thought they must be really upset inside, and I look like rubbish. But then I just thought, something must be wrong. That used to comfort me. Maybe I'm a terrible person. Does that sound bad?
It sounds like a useful tool for you at that time in your life. Am I passing muster, yeah, Rachel? Is that the correct answer?
Yeah, so I'm basically saying I hated the pretty ones.
Yeah, yeah. There's a word for that. But as you mentioned that there's been, it feels like there's been this shift now where, you know, has there been a shift? Do you think there has?
Yeah, definitely. And I think kind of things have moved from lots of parenting advice books and parenting manuals and parenting approaches to a new wave of people telling it in a more realistic way. I wonder if it won't shift again a little bit to also bringing back all the positives of motherhood and parenthood, and kind of bring those things kind of back in a little bit more.
I think the pendulum's gone too far in the kind of everything is shit.
And maybe we can highlight some of the positives even more now. But I think it needed to happen, because I think there were that message that one size fits all, and you know, you can get children, you can control children and get them to behave exactly as you want if you just do these things.
I think that starts with your birth plan as well, though, doesn't it? Even the vocabulary that's used, that you can even remotely plan something like that if you have a complete opposite experience to what you thought was plannable for. We're just not prepared for how that feels, you know, and it's such a shock, and it's such a momentous occasion, giving birth. And I think this whole culture of being able to snap back into shape or to be back to normal, the bounce back, and that, you know, and it's undermines how massive having a child is. And we're not kind of quite set up. We don't have the structural support anymore in our societies for dealing with that. And now social media, I guess, has kind of started to build that scaffolding that used to be the village, this kind of physical village, is now much more of a kind of internet village. I think it really frames your birthing experience, can really frame how you feel, how competent you feel as a mum. Certainly for me, I felt like I was, you know, my first experience was a complete horror show. And I wasn't expecting, I was quite smug. I thought I was a bit hippie. I was going to have a lovely home birth, and
just breathe through it. I'm just going to breathe through it.
More candles. Like, you know, just not enough candles, Anya. That was your problem.
Well, that was my
Anya,
problem.
Exactly. You
I should have. It all fell down with the candles. And I ended up, so I had an emergency cesarean, which was all just a disaster. And I think the judgments that I put on myself, and also the breastfeeding was a disaster. All of that. You kind of, and I, you know, and I did actually get judgments from other people, even if very sort of surreptitious, barbed comments.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry you had that birth. Exactly. Oh, what a terrible thing.
And, you know, and like, so someone, a friend, family friend had a home birth 2 days before and they were like, oh, she's doing amazingly. She looks amazing. And then this kind of...
Good for her. Yeah, exactly. Look at her in her stretchy vagina and her handles.
I did it and I had no drugs. Yeah. And sometimes I go, oh, I've known you since you were 14. You've been doing fucking... I've seen you put things up your nose from Colombia. Don't give it all now, it's all drug free. In this context, that makes you a bad person. Fuck you.
So, Dr. Rachel, have you seen what? I mean, what do you think about this birth plan bullshit? Come on, let's get the fisticuffs out. No, but what?
I mean, because what's interesting as well is we've seen kind of this huge rise in. So, I certainly see people who are suffering from post-traumatic stress, and then this. Rise in postnatal depression and postnatal anxiety and all of that as well. So even if there is a focus on birth, we're obviously not getting it quite right in terms of that experience, in that we're seeing, you know, a lot of those issues come to the fore as well.
What is the difference between PND, postnatal depression, and PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder? Like, how do you know which
acronym
you're lucky enough to have?
Spin the wheel, Ellie. Which acronym will they get? Ooh.
Let it be me. Let it be me. I really, really hope it isn't PTSD.
Oh, that was so good.
Such a light topic.
Yeah, I know.
Such a light topic.
Yay, Rebecca.
But yeah, like, how do you know it's, or do people have both? Is that a thing?
Right. I mean, I think it's always far more complex. So there's individual diagnoses, but I think it's often more complicated like that. And I'll often get asked, what's the difference between like baby blues and postnatal depression? Right. And I think there's some standard stock answers, but the reality is it's really complicated. And okay, some symptoms. So for PTSD, it might be things around flashbacks or having nightmares, as well as feeling very anxious or very low, or feeling physical symptoms. So I think for me, kind of, there are some specific symptoms of PTSD. But of course, people can have both or just some of those symptoms, and symptoms of depression as well. So I think it's about you, as an individual, kind of knowing what you were like before.
Right.
Knowing your,
recognizing your baseline. And recognizing what you're like after. And then also evaluating what the effect that that's having on your life or your relationship with your child as well.
And also, I would say, because I have found, because looking back after Morris's birth, I definitely was suffering from that kind of grey area spectrum, which I didn't at the time know existed, between what is, I didn't identify with the label postnatal depression, because I thought that was kind of, would appear as a clear black wall that you hit when you had a newborn. And for me, it was definitely more on the PTSD spectrum, because I was just very, very anxious and really, really bitter. Like, whenever this home birth was mentioned, I would feel this kind of very visceral sense of failure and physical kind of pain about what had happened. And I was so kind of mean to myself in terms of like how badly I'd done with my birth. I kind of said I'd done really badly. My you know, internal narrative was really mean. And, and if I'd kind of known that happens and was able to kind of recognize it, or even had one of the women that I spoke to about for the book, she had a friend who said to her, I think actually her friend was a psychologist, so that probably helped, but her friend said, I think that you're showing signs of just not being okay, and I feel like I recognize in that it's actually to do with your birth, I think you're holding on to trauma. Looking back, I know that I was a complete mess, but all at the time I was like, this is just really not very fun, and I don't understand. I didn't know objectively that I was acting in a kind of weird way, but what would have really helped is for just someone to say, are you all right? You know, rather than sort of say, oh, and that home birth was, the woman looks great, you know, instead of that sort of going, do you know what? You've had a really hard time. Are you okay? And that's what I've realised, that the kindness that you can find now on social media was just not available to me then. And I think that's something that now is a really amazing resource. It's kind of, I think that's what makes me feel sad about my first birth, is that I look at him now and he's so wonderful and, you know, kind of crazy and bonkers and so full of life and so kind of, so fills up the room with his energy. And I look at the experience that brought him into the world, and that kind of fills me with a little bit of sadness. That experience itself fills me with not a positive memory.
Yeah, it's like when you get a package from Amazon and the box is all kind of a bit broken, but inside is a really good present. That. I mean, you just, yeah, a mangled box. I mean, it's an amazing metaphor.
You're glad that the thing inside wasn't damaged by the horrible delivery.
Yeah.
Exactly that.
Yeah, no one wants a bad delivery from Amazon or your vagina. No. That's exactly what I'm saying, Ellie.
So that's what I said to the Amazon man. The other day, he had his hand up, he minched. Oh, I said, look, there's been a cross wire. I know I was doing a metaphor earlier, but it's gone too far.
I know.
Leave it.
I'm so sorry, Gary. It's
time for you to go.
Yeah.
Use DPD next time.
No, I said PTSD. DHL.
Oh dear, dearie me. So the Superman myth isn't kind of about the childbirth bit so much as it's more about, well, it is
there
a
is
bit
a
about that, but
there, about
yeah,
birthing Superman. Yeah. So there is a chapter about how your birthing experience informs your motherhood experience. Certainly, first time round.
Can you change that? Like, if you feel like, well, I had a really shit birth. You know, how do you kind of go, well, I'm not going to let that frame the rest of this thing.
I certainly, from my experience, certainly even just talking to Rachel, actually, in the writing of this book has been really interesting, because I realised I was holding on to all sorts of just blame, self-blame for, and also, you know, kind of, you can't help but, you know, Morris is a bit angry. He's quite an angry little boy, in a lovely way.
Say that. Shut up. Oh, I'm not having that. What bullshit.
Yeah, I love it.
Anger is not nice.
Yeah, so he set fire to the carpet in a very gentle manner.
He's not going to listen to the podcast, don't worry, he shat on my pillow very elegantly.
It was very elegant.
I gave him 9 out of 10. I put it on Facebook.
He's really angry, and I do wonder, I sometimes wonder if that's partly because we had such a horrible
experience. I mean, let the professional say, exactly. Really, like, no, that's bullshit. Actually, got someone who's trained. Yeah. Come on, Rachel, you do the talking.
No, it's bullshit.
She's talking shit.
So what I think is that experience that you've had just colours the way you would see everything afterwards. And I think, you know, even in terms of the language that we've talked, haven't we, about the language that's used during birth, especially when a birth doesn't go as planned. So even the language you might hear kind of, again, frames that experience that it might be something to do with you as a mum.
Yeah, because you have, you know, the word failure there. Is in your birth notes, failure to, you know, incompetent cervix.
Incompetent cervix.
Like, failure to progress.
My favourite band.
I love the first album.
If you have that in your head, I'm a failure, you know, then it kind of, if anything goes wrong and trips you up just in your day, like if it starts raining and you can't get the bloody rain cover on the buggy because you've never done it, and you're like, oh, I'm just really useless at this whole mum stuff, and it can, if you don't catch it, it can then just cascade, I think, and just become a real avalanche of, I'm just really shit.
Now, and one of the biggest stresses, I think, is the relationship stress. I remember one of my friends almost shaking me before I had my first child, saying, just work out who's going to do the domestic chores. Like, she didn't say anything about buggies or nappies. She sort of shook me and said, work out who's taking the bins out, work out all those sort of things. And obviously, that was a really big thing. And I think that's actually really true. If someone sort of graded all the stresses that a child brought into your life, it would be at 3 a.m. when your husband doesn't get up to fix the baby. Or if you're a single mum and you don't have that support, like, I mean, Rachel, like, how do you kind of cope with those? Or what advice do you give to new parents going through the rage phase, as I like to call it?
I mean, I definitely think, like, we talk in the book about different emotions that you're not expecting that really come to the fore. So guilt, anger, hatred. We definitely talk about kind of how to manage that anger in yourself, kind of physically, the angry thoughts you might get.
Yeah.
It's hard not to sound like a cliche talking about communicate, you know, open communication and finding a good time to be able to try to differentiate kind of some of those chores. In essence, that's what it's about, being able to try to talk through what the issue is and then come to kind of a joint solution with your partner about it.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's it though, isn't it? Because instead of, we store it up, one of the activities that Rachel gave me that I really loved was about exactly this. So when rage builds up and that kind of anger that you're just angry at everything after a while, because it's not just one thing, you know, it's that kind of every day, the bin or the shoes by the door or the, you know, stuff on the kitchen table and that
eating an apple loudly, you know, that shit. Yeah.
And one of the activities is actually to picture literally a rubbish dump and write down, so give yourself, you know, 5-10 minutes of just sort of writing or even doodling, drawing
and writing in blood.
What is it that's on your rubbish tip? And even just emptying that onto paper, well, A, emptying it onto paper will help, but B, you then have something that you can be like, right, I didn't realise that it was the fact that there were shoes just scattered by the door that was upsetting, it annoyed me so much. And you can then be with your partner and say, right, okay, look at this shit heap that we've created in our lives that's really annoying me. Let's try and work out.
I say
out.
We, yeah. Yeah, carry on. Yeah, go on.
Let's work out what we can do to kind of sort it out, or even just sharing that kind of knowledge that, oh, I didn't realise that that was driving you so insane.
Yeah.
And but I also think it is about finding something that works for you. So I think in terms of advice giving, it is this idea of one size fits all. I think I've met so many people who, you know, are tired of having people tell them to, you know, when they're feeling angry, I don't know, to have a bath or to light a candle and just try and calm down that way.
What you want to do with that candle at that point, yes.
And I think there is a certain amount of energy that comes with anger. So for some people, that might be more that they do want to just scream it out. So they might want to, you know, go somewhere and scream it out or scribble across a piece of paper, stamp around. Out,
yeah. Pictures of your mother-in-law's face. I mean, all the things.
Yeah. Go and have a spit somewhere or...
Have a spit? Have a spit?
Like it's the Wild West, Ellie.
I mean, I know you're from the north, but is that what you do up there? You just, Friday night, just going out for a spit, love. Be back by lunch. Go for a spit. Is that in the book? Is that recommended that people...
Oh, yes, no, page 28. Just to spit.
Just to do a spit.
Oh, amazing scenes.
There's a whole chapter on spitting. And, you know.
Oh. I love that. I'm going to try it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Is there a spittoon one could buy? A special mummy's spittoon?
Oh, sure, we could get it on Amazon. Yes. Get the Amazon man back again.
Yeah, so go for a spit.
Chew
some tobacco. Fuck me, I don't know. Amazing.
Who knows? We're opening up a whole new world.
Yeah.
I mean, it was Hygge last year, wasn't it? That was the thing to be into, but now it's spitting.
But in your book, you say, in all seriousness, you do say you provide these tools to help parents. So what are the tools, Dr. Rachel, we should have in our toolbox?
Yes.
Some of them are about dealing with different body, kind of the body feelings, body sensations that we get when we feel different things. In terms of those, I think, Anya, you've drawn a lot on mindfulness and Pilates.
Yeah, there's a lot of breathing in there.
Yeah,
we like a good breathe. Yeah. When we're not spitting, we like to breathe.
That's it.
I found it's difficult to do the two at the same time. Exactly. I've tried. Yeah, mindfulness.
But yeah, because initially we were talking about doing, it was going to be a CBT framework.
Sorry, I've just got to stop you. There are Australians listening to this. What's CBT?
So CBT is cognitive behavioural therapy, and the underlying premise of cognitive behavioural therapy is that the way you think influences the way that you feel and then the way that you behave.
Okay.
And then we decided that out of experience from just the lots of women that I was talking to, the thing about CBT is I don't think it really resonates with everyone. And the whole point of therapies is that you have to have quite an emotion or quite a kind of heart-led, if that doesn't sound too wanky, connection with something.
Yeah, it does.
Heart-led.
I'm stomach-led, but you know, that's just my profile.
You have to be stomach-led into these therapies. So you have to have a really kind of emotional connection with something in order for it to work for you.
Yeah.
And sometimes CBT can seem quite robotic and that it's very... checklist GCSE, if you think, change the way that you think and then this will happen, and it's sort of, and it's wonderful and it can be really powerful, but it might not resonate with certain different scenarios. So we decided to go with a multi-therapy approach. So not Rachel uses lots of different types of therapy with her various clients.
What's like spitting?
Yeah. This is like the pick and mix of therapy. Exactly. I have two of the CBTs, yeah. Some of that mindfulness, bit of Pilates.
Exactly that. Yeah, so we've got narrative therapy. So there's a lot of journaling in the book. So we do a lot of... there's a lot of activities where you write down and explore things. And so just trying to... So, I mean, we do say at the beginning of the book that some of the activities may not work for you. You might actually sort of want to, you know, kind of give it a miss and go on to the next one. But hopefully with all of them together, there'll be lots of stuff that you can kind of draw from in your daily life. Hopefully it's kind of a backpack of... If you're feeling a bit shitty, you can be like, okay, I'm, you know, I just need to breathe now. I just need to go and... Fine.
But let's get down to, as mums yourselves, what are your tipping points? What are the bits of your day as a mum that makes you just want to light that candle and then set fire to the curtains with it?
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I find the emotional, like both of my boys are very, and maybe or hopefully all children generally are, but they're very emotionally turbulent. And I sometimes just find that really hard. If like Morris flips out about, like, if I haven't brought him the right snack at the end of school, and he'll just get so cross with me, and he'll hold a grudge all the way home. And then Freddie will start, because he's only two, he'll have a little tantrum about something that a two-year-old might have a tantrum about. And then I'll be just like, God, in my former life, I'd be able to just walk down the road and be quite happy. And now I'm actually just having to deal with two humans who are shouting and screaming at me and really angry. And I know that when I'm feeling resilient, I'll probably be able to kind of make them laugh. Or, you know, if I was slightly more...
Yeah, but if you're knackered and you're
work or at home or whatever,
and it's raining, or like... And I do find myself saying to Morris, just let it go. You know,
And that's no fun. That's not...
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, I had a real low point a couple of weeks ago where I found myself saying to Charlie, oh, just grow up. And I was like, he's six.
Do you know what? That's exactly so many people said that to me. And that's actually that exact sentence in the book, because... You know, if in those moments you hear yourself saying, just grow up, and then you have to catch yourself and be like, I am the adult, you know. And actually, it is one of the things that, like, if you can, I mean, it's so hard to lift yourself out of that moment. And that's why it's always come back to the breath, because if you physically come into your body at those moments, then it does diffuse the emotional charge of it. It's hard to remember, but once you kind of get into a sort of habit of doing it, it's a bit easier to bounce back in those moments.
So even in a situation like that, where you've kind of looked back on it and thought, okay, perhaps I didn't handle that the way that I wanted to, I guess it's also about not beating yourself up too long.
Yeah.
And knowing that...
Not maybe talking about it on a podcast 3 weeks later or something like that, because it's still bothering you. Just like, not doing that. Don't do that. Why would you do that? What sort of moron would do that? Yeah, I get you.
Let it go, Ellie. That's what she said. Get over it.
Well, but in all seriousness, it's, how do you let it go? Because, you know, it's quite easy to say to someone, oh, just let it go, you know. The cold never bothered you. No. Anyway, but so how do you do that?
in terms of just taking a step back, I guess the things that really bother you are the things that kind of might tap into something a bit, without getting too deep, but might tap into something that you might have started to believe about yourself or think about yourself in terms of your mothering capabilities or yourself as a person. It's about beginning to try and reframe what you've seen or challenge perhaps the way you've interpreted it. Because you might interpret it as, okay, I'm tired, all mums feel this way sometimes, everybody behaves like this.
And let yourself off the hook a little bit.
Yeah, and right. If you were to do that, you're down a different kind of a different yeah. route.
But I think that's the thing, having, because I had never had therapy before, and actually sort of writing the book certainly was a real journey for me that was mind-blowing, because I realised that they are very simple, the steps are very simple, but that doesn't mean they're easy. And so it's the realising that actually it takes real discipline not to send energy to that negative thought pattern. So if, you know, because I was the queen of beating myself up, you know, one of my friends always used to say, in the red corner it's Anya, and in the blue corner it's Anya. You know, it was very much, like, that's what I have always, my whole life done. And so to realise that you can actually teach yourself not to do that was yes. just revelatory, and it does, and you know,
self-love, Anya. Oh, self-love.
Well, yeah, but it sounds,
you
so
love
wanky,
a bit of self-love.
Oh, I can't get enough of it, Ellie.
In the bath when the kids are out.
But some aspects of, so in, obviously that's within a CBT model, that idea of beliefs and thoughts, and that, and I think some aspects of that have become so mainstream that the interpretation of it is that you just, you know, it's about the glass being half full, or, you know, you just think positively.
Yeah.
Whereas, as you say, it is so difficult, even though we all might know that that's what we should be doing or right. we could do, in reality it's so difficult because everything's beliefs can be just so ingrained and or just kind of so subconscious we might not even realise what we're doing most of the time.
So it feels like, I'm going to nutshell your own book for you. That's what I do.
Go on then.
It's a gift.
Wrap it up.
It's a gift. It feels like the Superman myth, it's kind of not saying how to be a good mum.
No.
It's kind of saying
no one's
a perfect mum. Stop being a shit to yourself,
yeah,
in a nutshell.
Yeah. That should be the subtitle.
If you could condense, you know, because that's always fun when you spend a lot of time working on something.
I always like that, yeah.
If you could
sum up.
What would be your one nugget of wisdom that you would want to pass on to people from this book?
The thing that I personally have actually taken into my daily existence is that you have the power to change the way that you think about yourself. Knowing that actually you can slightly retune, so if you're listening to kind of crap FM about yourself, you can just change it to Magic FM about
yourself. Yeah, perhaps enjoy some Africa by Toto, something like that. Yeah. Rachel, nugget?
So my favourite activity is one called Bring Your Own Brass Band, and that's my main thing that I've took from it in terms of just celebrating your successes. And we were talking about not being too American and not kind of being too cheerleadery yeah. about it all.
Hello to our American listeners, by the way. We love you guys.
Sorry. To put a UK spin on it, and even a Northern spin on it, this idea of bringing your own brass band, that even in a day that's been shit, if you've managed to get most of the children fed, some clothed, even left the house, that's worth celebrating in some way. So I now, kind of in the back of my head, do bring my own brass band. And
do, you like,
little...
do you mean you literally visualise a brass
yeah.
band?
Yeah,
wicked.
Play it.
I love
amazing.
That.
This play is
all. And all celebrating me and what I've achieved for the day.
I love that.
I really like that. We need that on a T-shirt.
Are you going to...
Bring your own brass band.
BYOBB.
Yeah. I'd like it a lot. What an excellent way to end the podcast. But it hasn't finished yet, has it, Ellie?
No, it hasn't. Because, come on, let's have it. Let's have some Scummy Mummy confessions. Can I go? I'm going to go.
Oh, you're chomping at the bit, Ellie. Because I just want to confess.
Well, it's before I forget, because it was really recent. It was like about 3 hours ago. I was bathing my little boys with my mum. She'd come around to help out. And Charlie, my eldest... He said something about, oh, I'm going to say the F word. And just instinctively, I thought, he doesn't know what it is. And I said, what's the F word? And he went, fuck. And I went, ooh. And he saw my face and it went, oh. it looked like he was about to burst into tears. And I was like, no, no, to be fair, I just asked you what it was.
Yeah.
You've told me it's all right. It's all right. But, you know, I need to know where you've heard it, like who said it at
school. So I can have them killed.
You know, yes, exactly. So I can cut out their tongue. And he was like, it was Joe, who's my little one, who's like three. And I was like, no, it wasn't. Don't be silly. And then, so as Charlie and I are trying to have this conversation, Joe just starts going, fuck, fuck. And I'm like, oh, God. So my mum, she's like, no, no, furniture, furniture, furniture. So then Joe stands up in the bath and he just starts going, fucker, fucker, fucker.
I'm dead. I'm literally dead.
And me and my mum, we just took one look at each other and I had to leave the room. I was like, you have to do it. And I stood outside the door and I fucking pissed myself while I could just hear Joe going, fucker, and my mother going, furniture. Charlie didn't know what was going on.
Oh my God.
And I was hysterical. Oh, and I was like, I don't know what we're going to do, but there we go. That's my confession.
I've got a furniture-based confession.
Lovely stuff.
Okay, so we've done literally over 100 podcasts, but on podcast 23 we did a sex episode which we had a fanny physio who came along, and what she brought to us, was a sex toy brochure.
Oh God.
Okay, and so she gave it to us and she left, and I said, oh, well, look, I'll take it back to my house so I can send it to you.
Okay. Because God knows there's no way she could get another sex toy catalogue.
No, she could not. Anyway, so I didn't know what to do with it because I put it at the absolute top of the bookcase, and there it has stayed until today. And we had the renovators in, right? And they're making us a new bookshelf. And I said, oh, well, you're making the new bookshelf. Can you just take down the old bookshelf and put the books in a pile? When I got home tonight, the sex catalogue was on the sofa on the sofa with my childminder, like in the same room, next to my kids watching telly, right? And that was the first thing I saw. I was like, oh God, my childminder thinks that I've just got sex catalogues just casually laid out on our furnitures. Yeah, so I'm dead. I'm actually dead.
Oh, anyway, lovely stuff.
Come on, guys.
I had my first knit experience. I kind of naively thought that, I don't know why, I thought that because Morris was a boy, he wouldn't get knits at school. So stupid.
What?
I don't know why. Maybe because
they let you write a book. What are you talking about?
I'm a girl, I got knits. I kind of maybe just thought girls got, I don't know where.
Did you think
from.
Knits are feminist?
I just don't know. I thought maybe girls get because they have long hair. This is core beliefs, they happen when you're a child. That's why.
That is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
It's a girl thing. It's a girl.
So basically, Morris, my beloved, gave me knits, but I didn't realise, and I didn't know that he had knits. And basically, for like probably 2 months, these knits were gathering and multiplying.
Oh no, I've got to scratch my head.
My scalp's going.
Even one evening, I had like this kind of feeling. I was like, oh God. And I still didn't. Because he was only four, so he'd only just started school.
He couldn't have knits, he's so young!
And he's got a penis! Everyone knows knits hate penises.
And then I went to get my hair cut in somewhere in East Dulwich, and I had really long hair, and basically showered knits and head lice everywhere. Because basically, the next day, I scratched my head, took my hand, and there was a horrible, creepy head lice in my fingernail, and I was like, oh my God.
But the hairdresser didn't say anything to you.
She didn't say anything, and she literally, I went out immediately when it came, and I went like that, and there were literally about 15. I mean, I was riddled.
Oh my God.
So that's kind of my confession, that I possibly gave everyone in East Dulwich head lice.
Doc, have you got a confession for us?
So I'd sent my daughter to like a holiday club, but you know, one of those lovely ones that's out in the woods where it's all back to nature and they spend like days
whittling.
Yeah, yeah. whittling
themselves,
campfires up trees and all of that. So it was all supposed to be very lovely and sedate and that. And then she'd come back on the first day and had said, she'd gone to the little toilet or whatever in the woods, she'd learnt three different kind of words that somebody had like graffitied or scrawled on the next to it, and what did they mean? And so as I'm driving her home, she starts off with fuck. So she just said,
you know, how old was she? Sorry?
So this was last year, so she was 7. The second one was wanker. And then she just said, and the third thing they'd written was, suck my balls.
Suck my balls.
And I was so like, I was in the car like, suck my balls. She's obviously saying, like, well, she starts off with saying, what are they all? And I'm saying, you don't need to know what they all are. And then I was saying, obviously, like, you know, the F word, that's really bad. So is the wanker. Suck my balls. Weird, don't say that either.
It's a request more than anything.
It's just take, you know.
Yeah. Pass me a drink, suck my
balls. It depends if I had a question mark on the end of it.
Yeah.
Depends how aggressive it is. Yeah. That for me.
To go on a woodland experience.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
just all ruined. In one go.
Sullied by the
Did you make a dream capture? Nope.
I learned a sex act.
Oh, lovely stuff. Well, thank you. Thank you for your confessions. Thank you for coming on the podcast. Your book, The Supermum Myth, is literally out now.
You can get it from, ladies.
It's on Amazon. It's also on Waterstones, I think.
You always ask them that as if it's going to be a different answer. As if someone's going to go, my book is actually only available in Wilko's. Shop.
Yes, we have a book, don't we, Ellie?
We do. It's still in print. Yes, and we have lots of live shows around the country. Go to scummymummies.com to find out dates and follow us on all the social media.
At Scummy Mummies. And of course, what we'd really like you to do, listener, is to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and rate and review us.
Yes, please.
Which a lot of you have done. So thank you very much. Okay, I like praise. I like my own brass band. Brass band me, people. Brass band me.
Where can people follow you guys?
I'm on Instagram, mothers.wellness.toolkit, and on Twitter as Anya Pilates, because I did Twitter a long time ago, and you can't change your name on Twitter, can you?
Can you not?
Anya Pilates is quite good, though. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a character from one of our shows. Dr. Rachel?
Yeah, and I'm on Twitter at Time Psychology.
Okay. That's quite profound. That's quite weighty. I like that.
Time psychology.
Yes.
Yes, yes. No, it's
two
good.
Entire concepts in yes. one Twitter handle. Shit. That's what that says. It's good. I like it. Strong. Yes. It's bold.
What time is it? It's time psychology.
Time psychology is what time it is. 1:30 time psychology.
Not psychology time.
Why is psychology time?
It's psychology time.
Psychology time.
Yeah.
Too peppy. Time psychology together at last in one Twitter handle.
Oh, good.
Do you think we've sufficiently taken the piss out of you? Thank you so much for coming all the way from Manchester just so I can take the piss out of your Twitter name. Really very generous
of you.
It's good.
It's good. And I like that we just, you know, walked all over Anya's, you know, fears and you know, what's the word? When we just said it was bullshit that you had these feelings. Yeah. Her feelings. We walked on her feelings.
Insecurities. That's what we prey on.
Yeah,
that's
good.
Our lifeblood.
And if we were in a session, I wouldn't say that.
Bullshit. Did you do that while you're smoking a cigarette in the corner? Yeah, bullshit. Get bullshit. Over yourself.
Time's up.
And now that's time psychology.
Oh my god. Just in case the listener is freaked out, I just want to say Dr. Rachel is shaking with silent laughter. I don't think she's properly offended.
No,
it's all right. Let's end it there.
Let's
end it. Thank you so much. Until next time.
Bye.
Love that brass band.
Somebody had said it, a client had said it to me in a session about, like, oh, look at him, he brought his own breast down. And then I thought,
fucking yes, he fucking did. And we like it. Something gloriously northern about brush bands as well.
Yeah.
Like on a grey day in a bandstand, and you're like,
you've seen Brastoff.
Basically, I'm describing Brastoff. That's for the outtake. Thank you very much.
In a minute, she'll go, there's something so northern about kestrels. A boy and a crystal. What's that film, kids? Yeah.
Oh, hello to the north.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.